This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
We're going to get a little bit of Italian with you today. We're talking about coffee. We're talking to a young man who's from an Italian dynasty. And we will also be talking to an international Italian chef. His name is Luca Ciano. It's all getting very Italian here. You're on Cravings on Joy 94.9. I know you're sitting in your car on your way to IKEA wondering, what the hell is he doing? That is a bit of Tarantella music. Tarantella, of course, Italian music. You'd probably be more familiar with it if I played one of the old-fashioned Tarantellas, but I wouldn't do that to you. Saturday afternoon, 7 minutes past one. Good afternoon, I'm Pete Dillon. This is Cravings. I'm delighted to have your company. I'm also delighted to have the company of a young man sitting in the studio. We've been having very big philosophical discussions while we're waiting for you to join us. His name is Craig, and he is a coffee roaster. He's a barista. He's a competed in barista competitions. He's a latte art specialist, and he's now a barista judge, amongst many other things. He calls himself a multifunctional, high-level all-rounder. I won't use the other term because his boss may be listening. Craig, welcome to Cravings.
Thank you very much, Pete.
A very loosely themed Italian program today, and we could not do Italy without talking coffee, and Veneziano coffee sounds very Italian, so it's a perfect fit. Tell me about how Veneziano came about, and are you drinking Veneziano coffee in your right hand as you sit there?
I am drinking Veneziano coffee. It's
good,
very
man.
Delicious. Have to fire up on the day with a coffee.
With a brew?
Yep.
Where's it come from? Is it a local cafe?
It's a local cafe in the city, on the way through.
Excellent.
Veneziano is named after its founding namesake, Rocky Veneziano, started 14 years ago.
Should have been an actor, by the way, with
I know,
a name like Rocky Veneziano.
It's a fantastic stage name, isn't it?
Brilliant.
So he had been working for a large multinational coffee company, but started his own cafe and eventually decided that he'd like to roast coffee for his cafe, thought that was a good idea, and that started the whole process, and it started with two of them above the shop on Bridge Road, and about 6 months in, it turned out that they hadn't got the permits to roast and got themselves in a bit of trouble, and moved over to Abbotsford, and ever since then we've grown and grown and grown. Now it's roasting around about 35 ton of coffee a week, and it's lots of coffee goes through the building.
I assume this was all before we became wankers about coffee.
Well, I mean, let's loosely use the term wankers, but yeah, this was certainly when coffee was a lot more of a functional beverage. It serves multi purposes. It certainly functions for people's get up and get rolling drink, but also it has become like, I guess, food has become. It's become more of a taste experience where the origin and the terroir and the uniqueness of where coffee is from is being made to be expressive.
And these are terms that we would normally use with wine. We're talking about terroir. We're talking about the earth in which the coffee is grown and the benefits of having a soil with a slightly different pH and the effect on the beans and all of that sort of stuff. We've been talking about this with wine for 50 years. And we're actually now starting to see people matching coffee with food as wine has been done in the past. At what point do we stop this and start enjoying the beverage for the simple pleasure of coffee?
Well, I actually think it can run in parallel. Mm. I think that it doesn't. It can be whatever you want it to be. You know, there's no problems with coffee being something that it literally is a functional beverage, be that instant coffee or a pod or whatever you like.
Let's not use the word instant.
Or it can be that taste experience where you want to go and find out what a country's coffee tastes like. It's cool either way.
And if you're talking the difference between Ethiopia and Tanzania, or you're talking the difference between Ethiopia and Papua New Guinea or somewhere in South America, I mean, there's a whole great big world out there that we don't know a great deal about still. We're finding out that, you know, orange is something that we can taste in coffee beans. What are some of the other flavours that we should look for to make sure that we've got the right stuff?
Yeah, well, I think like any of the fruits are a viable taste experience. The like Central American coffees, you'll find a lot of citrus. You'll find a lot of Yellowstone fruits. African countries, you'll find a lot of berries, cherries, that sort of flavours. Through Brazil, you'll find coffees that have a lot of flavours reminiscent of chocolate and different nuts and cream and that sort of stuff.
So again, we're going to that almost that wine tasting wheel where we know that Shiraz that comes from Central Victoria is going to have a slightly more of that black pepper kick on the back palate, whereas a Shiraz that comes from Margaret River is going to be slightly more mellow and have more of that red berry sort of stuff. So we're dealing with exactly the same experience.
Yeah, it is exactly the same. I mean, in terms of the functionality, coffee has roughly 350 to 500 unique compounds when it's green, and once it's roasted, that's around about 1,000 unique organic compounds.
So roasting brings out more of those.
Yeah,
unique compounds.
you have bringing them out. You also have them changing with heat and temperature, so the organic acids are reacting together and forming different compounds. Compared to a glass of wine, has something like 190 unique compounds. So they're certainly there in terms of that. Flavor perception, all of those compounds are available. I guess there's just a lot more noise in a coffee in terms of competing flavor compounds versus a wine. Wine's a much more articulate beverage because it's designed by the winemaker. You take the cap off, pour it in your glass. There's not as many compounds to look through. And it kind of makes sense because it's a fruit-based liquor. It makes sense that would be the notes that you'd be tasting.
Whereas
coffee is the seed of a cherry off a tree, and you roast it, and it's most people don't expect it to be, you know, cherries and apricots and honey and black tea, because in the past when it was just a functional beverage, we used to roast it incredibly dark, and it used to just taste like ash and carbon
and dirt used from to
be
the garden.
Yeah, it used to be a heavy roast type flavor note that you would get.
It is a fascinating discussion, one that we're going to continue over the hour. It's 30 minutes past one. You are here with me, Pete Dillon, on Cravings on Joy 94.9. Very soon we'll be joined in the studio by Carlo Grossi. And further down the track, we will speak to Luca Ciano, who's an international chef. He has a new book out, and we're going to talk to him about that as well. All coming up between now and 2 o'clock. You're on Cravings with me until 2 on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are. There's a man that's half Italian as well, Adam De Silva. You are on Cravings. It's 1:15. We are deep down and dark in a fascinating discussion about coffee with Craig Simon. He is from Veneziano Coffee, loosely themed Italian program today. We were discussing, for those that have just joined us, the nuances in flavour of coffee and what happens when coffee is roasted, the increase in compounds. What are the compounds that give us that little bit of get up and go? What is that makes us want to work a bit faster or be a bit more human?
Well, I mean, I guess the caffeine is the component of coffee that for most people is that the buzz part. The fascinating thing for that part is that they've done scientific studies on decaffeinated coffee, and they've found that people behave, if they don't know that it's decaf, people actually behave the same. They feel the same sort of buzz. So
psychosomatic, are you telling me?
I don't know whether it's psychosomatic or maybe there's some other stuff other than the caffeine that, you know, that hasn't been investigated properly.
Mm, well, I guess with all of those compounds, there's talk around the health benefits of coffee for the liver,
yep.
For dementia, for a whole bunch of illnesses where consumption and moderate consumption, we talk about everything in moderation, like we talk about booze, moderate consumption of coffee can actually have some fairly significant health benefits.
Yeah, I think coffee seems to go in swings of good and bad for you. But at the moment, there's been...
Avocados did that for 20 years.
Yeah, I know. There's been plenty of studies that have shown coffee to be very beneficial for your liver and for dementia. I read a study that said coffee consumption can assist in like brain tumours because you have the vasoconstriction, like it have the vessel constriction and it limits the oxygen. There's all sorts of interesting things that coffee seems to be positive for. But I'd be tempted to say that the benefit would be in black coffee consumption as opposed to milk.
So we should stop sticking so much milk in it.
Yeah, I moved on to black coffee a while ago, and that's my favourite way of doing it.
I have tried. I have so tried. But I fail. I sort of a half-size latte. It's just that there's enough milk to take some of that very bitter edge off it, because I'm not very good with bitter foods.
It certainly limits where you can get a coffee once you go to black coffee. It needs to be made incredibly well to minimise the bitter, because or at least to balance it out with the other elements of it.
Because it's easy to muck it up, isn't it?
You can really over-extract easy to make it, coffee taste bad.
Yeah. Which is sad because so many people do make it taste bad. Let's talk a little bit about you, because how did you come to this place to know so much about coffee? Did you wake up one day when you were 13 and go, I'm going to be a barrister, and got it wrong and became a barista? Was there a light bulb moment?
Well, it's a longer story than that, perhaps. I started as a full-time touring musician. My dad was a drummer.
Right.
And I started playing at 5, and I was on the road at 16 touring, and I went straight from school to the Conservatorium of Music, and then...
What do you play?
Drums.
Right.
And then after that, I joined James Morrison's band for 7 years and toured around the world with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of got to that timeline and the money still wasn't amazing, so I needed a day job to pay some bills, and I ended up washing dishes. So I went. So I tried a few different things, ended up washing dishes in a cafe because it was daytime and music's nighttime, and that turned into 6 a.m. till 6 p.m., in the cafe, and then put my suit on and go and do gigs at the concert hall. And it was a bit of a dichotomy for a while, and then I needed some sleep. So the coffee kind of took over, and I worked as a barista for a few years, and then I joined Veneziano Coffee 9 years ago now. And when I joined, a lot of the guys were spending evenings making coffee and serving them in some sort of presentation type of thing and having beers and enjoying themselves. And so I was like, well, I'll be part of that. And it turns out that they were preparing for these barista competitions that I'd had no idea what they were. And but I wanted to be part of that. You know, you don't want to be the odd person out.
So that's quite a bit of FOMO, fear of missing out.
Exactly. So I jumped on board, and that was 9 years ago. I've competed every year since then and retired from competition last year.
Retired at the grand old age of what, 30-something?
30-something. But 9 years in a row that's enough. 9 years in a row of competition's enough. I managed to win Australia twice. I came second in Australia twice, and I came fourth in the world competition in 2014. I thought that's a good run. I'll hang it up.
I'll retire now.
Yeah, I'll retire from that. And so now I sit on the other side of the table and I judge, which is really fascinating. It's funnily enough, I'm more nervous judging than I was competing.
Really?
Yeah, I feel a lot of a burden of responsibility to try and make sure they're scored fairly.
Is there also that horrible fear that you've been blagging your way through and you can just totally stuff it up?
No, pretty confident that I'm pretty confident in my skills these days. I think I know what I'm talking about.
Oh, no, I know people who, like me, have careers where they go through and they're successful, but there is this incredible element of self-doubt where you sort of sit there and think, geez, am I just blagging my way through this, and I've been able to bluff all the way to now, and somebody's at some point going to catch me out.
You're going to get called out at some point. Look, I think for there's probably always that element. I think that pushes you to keep trying to succeed and do it better. But yeah, so it's been enjoyable. So that's kind of defined what I know about coffee, I guess.
So music is in your DNA. Coffee is not. But coffee has become your life.
Oh, yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Interesting talking about DNA, because there's a man just sat down next to you who the DNA is unquestionable. He is the son of...
I was going to say, actually, talk about bluffing your way through.
No, I would never say that. You come from good stock. Hello, Grossi. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here. Sorry for being late.
That's all right. Those people listening at home in their car or lying on the sofa nursing a hangover are going to close their eyes and go, God, he sounds like his father.
Yeah. It's one of those undeniable facts in life that as you get older, you do become your parents. So,
yes.
Unfortunately, fortunately, because he's a good-looking fella,
yes.
For me, I actually am becoming very much like Dad.
So. You are becoming a great deal like Dad. Hey, is it hard to follow in his footsteps? So I was just talking. Craig's father was a touring musician. He went to the Conservatory of Music and became Conservatorium of Music and became a drummer. And, you know, toured internationally and all of that. Is it hard, question for both of you, to follow in your father's footsteps when they are successful and known? I mean, it's probably a bit more difficult for you because your father's life has been so public.
Mm. No, for me, actually, it's never really been a thing so much as to follow in the footsteps. Dad always said to me, I mean, he gave me every opportunity to do whatever I liked. And growing up, he really encouraged me to explore all avenues of career and schooling and whatever I wanted to just get involved in. And he always warned me of the perils of the industry and sort of if you actually wanted to get involved and be in this industry, it's such a passion-driven industry that you really had to know what you wanted to do. And, you know, me being the testadura or the hard-headed young man that I was, I just decided that's what I wanted to do, and I really do have a passion for it. And I went down that front-of-house path where I run our dining rooms now, and working with Dad is probably one of the most rewarding, and my whole family is one of the most rewarding and great things about what I do as well.
I swear I've sat and had a similar conversation to your father about his father. And that sort of that sense of go and do what you want to do, but if you come back, it's here for you.
Yeah.
Mm. Did you struggle following your dad's footsteps as a musician?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the only challenge is the feedback's probably a little bit more focused from your dad when you're doing the same thing. I guess it's you end up probably making the same mistakes that your parents make, and your parents are trying to straighten the path for you and try and have
shield you from those mistakes.
Well, yeah, shield you or help you maybe achieve more. But I think sometimes you actually just have to make those mistakes. So I would say maybe the critical appraisals of progress might have been tougher, but I think it's always fun to have something to share with your parents. You know, it's certainly a connection that you can talk about in a lot more detail, so that part's always enjoyable.
What does your dad think of your life now as a barista?
I don't know really. He lives in Sydney, so we catch up every once in a while. I've done pretty well, so he's proud
probably,
of that.
He's probably worried that you're paying the rent and keeping a roof over your head.
I've got the rent covered, so
excellent.
We're okay.
That's good.
That's half the bell.
Carlo, is it a challenge for you carrying the Grossi surname?
No, not really.
Or is it a badge of honour?
Well, I look at it as a badge of honour. It's my name, so I'm proud of it, deeply proud of it. That's a really hard question. Wow.
I want to phrase it another way for you. When you were a young kid growing up, were you always going to work in the business, or did you have a dream that you would be an astronaut or a policeman or
a school
teacher?
I actually wanted to be a politician.
A politician.
There is plenty
of... Don't dismiss it. There's plenty
of time. Campaign 2019 right here.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin 07. We've got Carlo 20.
No, I really enjoyed that sort of... the whole notion of politics and international studies. I really did. I did a lot of that through school. I always loved restaurants, and still, even if I'm out to lunch and I'm sitting in a restaurant and it goes from that special little time frame where a few tables are in there, and then you can hear that gentle hum as it really starts to hit its straps. I just love that. I get excited by that. I was lucky enough when I was really young to go traveling, and I was fortunate enough to be traveling with some people that took me to some really amazing restaurants in New York and San Francisco and Chicago, like Alinea. And
I was going to say, drop some names, because they're places that I probably have on my bucket list. So Alinea, which is Grant
Arzak's place.
Yeah.
Per Se was one of them.
Which is Thomas Keller.
We went to a few of the Batali places, but just places that, you know, they really operate in the upper echelon of their industry overseas. And
have you eaten at Osteria Francescana?
I haven't eaten there, no.
Oh, it's on my list, too.
On the list.
I haven't eaten there. I actually need to
go back to Italy. That's where I need to get back. That's the next trip. But seeing those sorts of places quite young, it just sort of reignited what I wanted to do and made me realize that I always just adored being in and around a restaurant. So, and sort of the pace of it, the mad frenetic energy that's in and around the kitchen and the dining room, and the pressure of organizing so many little moving parts for, you know, 4 or 5 hours of service just to get it just so. It just really appeals to me. So, yeah.
There is a certain buzz in that service that you just can't seem to wash off or shake off.
Call it an adrenaline junkie, but I just love it.
Well, yeah, but, you know, there's adrenaline junkies jump out of airplanes or off buildings. This is it's a very different sort of an adrenaline junkie when, you know, and I've talked to chefs about it, and you were talking about it earlier as far as the service of coffee goes. There is a requirement to, it's time pressure. There's somebody standing there waiting for you to give them something that is important to them at that time, whether it's coffee first thing in the morning, because there is no greater importance in my life than coffee first thing in the morning, or whether it's you delivering a beautifully crafted meal to a dish of food to somebody that they've been waiting for because it's a special occasion and they've waited 10 years to eat at one of the restaurants. We don't know that. That sense of adrenaline, I think, is slightly different to jumping out of a building or off a building or something.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I think the other thing that really appeals to me is sort of, you know, that whole essence of whenever you get into a new space as well, because we've sort of bounced around a few of our venues, but that crafting of a team, bringing a group of people together, that's the other thing that I really just I love, and it still keeps me getting up and coming back to work every day.
Well, that also your brand.
Well, that, yeah.
28 minutes past one here on Joy 94.9. Very shortly, we'll grab Luca Ciano on the phone and have a discussion with him as well in this very loosely themed Italian episode. It's Cravings here on Joy 94.9.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Look, it's not Italian. It should have been an introduction by Guy Grossi. I'm sorry, but I can't find that one. 26 minutes to two here on Joy 94.9. We are having a bit of an Italian episode now. Interesting, I chose that piece of music because it was called Tutti Italiani. I found it in our digital play art box. But interestingly, you played with that artist.
Yeah, it turns out I've played with George Garzone, who was the saxophone player on that track. He's a fantastic saxophone player.
Is he really famous?
He lives in Boston, and he's very well renowned.
Boston. That's exactly how they say it. Correct. Tutti Italiani means everybody's Italian, doesn't it?
We're all Italian.
We're all Italian. See?
In this city, I think it's quite true.
It is. It is. My next guest, not my next guest, the next person you're going to hear from is Italian himself. He's from Milan. His name is Luca Ciano. He's a chef. He'll tell you about him. Buongiorno, signor.
Buongiorno. Hello, everybody. How's everybody going?
Good, good. I'm sure Carlo can probably speak more than... I've used all my Italian. I'm done. You know, buongiorno and ciao is pretty much as far as I go.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
Tell us about your new book, Seasonal Journey.
Yeah, look, we just released the book about not even a month ago. So far, so good. Everybody's sharing a lot of love and passion for what I've done. And basically what I've done with my seasonal journey is quite simple. Being Italian, born and raised, you know, I've got a strong attachment to the four season. I come from Milan, as you mentioned, so up north, and we definitely get the four season with with a very clear statement in each season that the weather changes, the state of mind changes, the cooking style and habits does change. And because I've been in Australia on and off for about 15 years and I live in sunny Sydney, I tend to miss that a lot. Sydney and Australia, to me, it's quite of a long summer. I know it's not, but, you know, it's kind of pretty warm throughout the year. And I deeply miss the four season and what the food comes down to be in every single season. So what I've simply done when I had the opportunity to do a cookbook, I split the four seasons. I picked up the dearest ingredients to my heart, and for each ingredient, I developed X amount of recipe just to give the readers an idea of what to do in summer with tomatoes, not just a pasta and a tomato salad, but, you know, there's plenty more things we can do with tomato. And the story just repeats season after season with a very personal touch. That's how I've done it.
What are some of the ingredients you've found that you've fallen in love with?
Oh, look, I think I didn't really have to change too much. One of the questions I get asked a lot, like, how have you dealt with the book? Because in the Southern Hemisphere, against, you know, living in Europe, and people either forget or they don't put their mind towards it. But, you know, tomatoes are in season in summer. Doesn't matter where you are in the world. So obviously, summer here is the opposite of Europe and vice versa. So in terms of researching different ingredients, I haven't really done much of that. I think I focused a little bit more in ingredients that I love. And here in Australia, there's not a great usage. So for instance, now we're in autumn and I badly love chestnuts. And, you know, Australians do like chestnut, do eat chestnut, but nowhere near as much as we do in Italy. So, you know, it was a focal point for me to definitely spend some time with chestnuts, making, you know, silly things like chestnut fritters with honey and ricotta, which is extremely simple. Just work the whole ingredients together, deep fried it, and, you know, they come golden and puffy and light. Or to go as far as become a bit more chefy and make some chestnut gnocchi with some chestnut flour and chestnut itself. So I think I've tried to keep a good balance of what extremely authentic Italian and basic and simple. And also, you know, I've been a chef for 20 plus years, so of course I had to show off a little bit and trying to do something a little bit chefy here and there.
A little bit chefy. Are you a fan of chestnuts, Carlo?
I adore chestnuts.
Do
Ciao
you?
Luca, Carlo qui.
Carlo, how do you like your chestnut? What's the best way you like your chestnuts cooked?
I'm a bit of a traditionalist, just over the open
just
fire, personally. Yeah, just split,
yeah,
and
agree.
Over the open fire. I remember being in Milano when I was very, very young.
That's
and
it.
Walking through the piazzas, and they're just roasting there and from the street
That's
vendors.
Right.
And for me, you just can't beat something like that. We're doing a dish at the
100%.
Moment. 100%. We're doing a dish at the moment with the little salsiccia di vitello, veal sausage that we've made ourselves.
Oh, yum.
And then we're just taking some chestnuts and we boil them off previously, and then we just
Fantastic.
Roast them off into a little burnt butter and finish them with the sausages. And that's
where's that on? What time are we going?
That's on at Ombro. You can come any day, 7 days a week. But yeah, so chestnuts for me, there's something that my grandfather used to go nuts over. He was a southerner,
but
my grandmother's from the north, so he always had a bit of a taste for the finer things from the north.
Craig, how would chestnuts go with coffee?
Chestnuts and coffee. I would say you'd have to work it into like a dessert to make it work. I think coffee and nuts. Sounds
well, there
me.
You do. You can do my chestnut fritters with honey and ricotta. But it's exactly, you know, these things about chestnuts. Actually, tomorrow I was supposed to go chestnut picking, but there's rain forecast, so I'm not keen to go and get wet and pick up chestnuts. But I think it's one
oh,
of
come on, that's a bit lazy.
Where's the Partigiano in you, man?
Oh, come on, it's Sunday. I'm going to leave late in bed. you know, it's one of those things you go, and it feels like, I'm only 38. I'm not that old, so I can say I'm 38. And I remember when I was a kid with a family going on, you know, from Milan, just about an hour drive. There's plenty of forest, and you know, the feeling you get of picking up chestnuts, unless you're not stepping into somebody's backyard. I mean, they're on the ground. They're free. It's like for a kid to pick up candies, right? So I remember me and my brother picking up, you know, bags full of chestnuts, and my mom had to, the poor thing, she had to cook chestnuts for bloody months to come. She just had no idea anymore what to do after a couple of cakes and a couple of pasta dishes and desserts and whatever. And that's the feeling that I get from chestnuts. You know, they're there, they're free. And actually, I got another phone call yesterday from friends. They listen, come and get some, because they're going rotten on the ground. That's how simply, you know, you play with chestnuts. They're there for everybody to play with.
Luca, your line's getting a little bit ropey there for me, mate. So either that's better. So apart from chestnuts, what else have you found that we're coming into? Obviously, we're in autumn. We're going to come into winter. What should we look for in winter? That's seasonal. That we should create something with.
Look, what I usually do, winter, beside the ingredients, the winter ingredients, I focus a lot on the, you know, comfort food, that sort of style of cooking, from slow cooked and braised items. So, you know, if you look at something like corn, corn maize to make polenta, you know, obviously I'll make it 365 days a year, but winter when it gets nice and cold, that's where I focus a lot on wintry dishes, going along with the ingredients. Mushroom, they sort of, you know, mushroom and pumpkins is something that it's in season now that will carry across, and that's what I do a great use between the two seasons, winter and autumn. And mushroom, again, is a lot of fun going and foraging for mushroom. People get the opportunity to do that as well. So a lot of comfort food when we move into this time of the year, moving all the way to winter.
Excellent, mate. That line's still a bit ropey, so we're going to...
I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. What we'll do, we'll catch up with you again in the next couple of weeks, and we can talk some more about the book. It's called Seasonal Journey. You'll find it at good bookstores. Luca Ciano is the chef that's put it together. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, guys.
Ciao.
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 That is Luca Ciano. That line was just getting a bit difficult for me to hear. We're going to have a quick break, and we'll be back with Carlo and Craig to talk about coffee and restaurants and all sorts of things. It's 18 minutes to 2 here on Joy 94.9.
Your community is our business. Joy 94.9.
Your community is our business. It's 16 minutes to 2. Our business today is all things a little bit Italian. Carlo Grossi is here. Craig Simon is here. We are all here to talk about things that are Italian. We were talking earlier about coffee and nuance and flavour, and it's interesting, Carlo, we're having a discussion about the way that coffee is being used as a match with food, like wine traditionally has been done, and whiskies and stuff. Are you a bit of a coffee fan, a coffee addict?
Oh, well, doing what we do, it's hard not to be.
It is hard not to be.
It's like the juice of life, especially prior to 9 a.m.
I thought Brunello was the juice of life.
Well, that's after 9 a.m. Before 12, then we go into Barolo.
Yeah, exactly.
Coffee for us is a big part of what we do. I mean, as far as identity goes, nothing shouts Italy more than, you know, the smell of beautiful roasted coffee beans grinding as you walk into the cellar bar, hearing, you know, the coffee get smashed out and the machine going away, and
it's a certain sort of magic that
exactly.
As somebody who roasts coffee, you get to experience that almost every day, I would imagine.
Yeah, you do. I'm a little bit inert to the smell of it. I find
are you?
I'm not quite as sensitive to it anymore. It's but the compounds when you're roasting it are not quite as enjoyable as when it's been sitting in a bag for a week and you throw it in the grinder. It's much more enjoyable aromas when you get it in the grinder.
So when you're roasting, what do you smell?
It puts off a lot of CO2, funnily enough, carbon dioxide.
Okay.
When you're roasting coffee, the sugars are breaking down, and that's what comes. So it's not that aromatic.
Oh, that doesn't sound as pleasant as I thought. You're taking some of the magic out of it.
Oh, sorry.
Definitely taking the magic out of it.
Good heavens. The first time always does.
Yeah. Okay. You just made me blush. That hasn't happened since 1973. Well done, my friend. I'm interested in I want to talk culture now, because I think coffee is so inherent in our culture because of that sort of post-war migration way from Europe, particularly from Italy. And I think, Carlo, your family history goes back to that period and beyond here in Melbourne. How much has Italian culture shaped the way we think as Victorians, as Melburnians?
I think, I said before, in Melbourne we're sort of all Italian. And it's not dissimilar to when you go to somewhere like New York. The Italian culture there is really rich. And
I thought you were going to say we're all Jewish or Irish. Or
No, it's Italian. But you do have this sense when someone opens an Italian restaurant or does coffee or anything that's sort of synonymous with Italian food, culture, wine. Melburnians and Victorians in general, they have this almost a sense of authority over it. And the quality of everything that we do in this city especially is incredible. I mean, I know I'm going to get some flack from this, but you compare it to somewhere like Sydney's coffee culture.
Where it's oranges and apples you're comparing.
Exactly.
Sydney doesn't have it. Well, Sydney does. There's an analogy I've used for a very long time that Melbourne's a lady and Sydney's just a whore.
Are you going to make me blush?
No, no. At various times in your life, you may need one or the other.
I might have to move up to Sydney.
However, I think there is. I think that's a fine analogy because Sydney is far more interested in being brassy and you know, a bit of self-aggrandizement and all of that, whereas Melbourne is probably a little more. We're a little more classy.
Mm. You got more of that sort of European attitude to life. You know, you can walk down the street in Melbourne and find a hole in the wall where you can get an amazing espresso, or you can...
Or dumplings,
or you can have a little glass of wine and, you know, a dumpling or a croquette. Or it's diverse. And a lot of that has come from the acceptance of when people migrated over, like my grandparents and people before them since back in the early 40s. And you see that culture, like, immerse even families that have been here generationally. And like I said, they have sort of, Melburnians have sort of a sense of authority when it comes to a plate of pasta. They know a good plate of pasta. They know a great espresso. And I think that has really helped shape the culture and the thinking in this city.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think the one thing that's particularly different, because I'm not originally from Melbourne, I've moved here 10 years ago.
From
Sydney. Yeah, thanks.
I didn't mean to call you a whore.
No, it's totally fine. I've been called worse. I think it's that sense of hospitality that you really get that is so common across Europe. You know, it's, and particularly Italy. Everyone is so incredibly hospitable and welcoming, and I think that's really shaped the food and coffee culture through Melbourne, that sense of hospitality. I mean, that's obviously the name that it's all given. And you really get that sense of warmth and welcome, even if the food or the wine or the coffee offer is quite elevated in what they're trying to achieve, you still have a certain warmth to it that I think is maybe missing in some of Sydney's offers in that sense.
I also think it comes from our cultural understanding of ourselves. I think we have in Melbourne a very strong sense of who we are and what we're good at. We don't try and have magnificent beaches, and we haven't got that great big pond with a little bridge over it and a pointy house. We've got a much stronger sense of identity of who we are. And Sydney may have exactly the same thing, but for us, it's about culture, it's about food, it's about going to have a plate of pasta and a glass of wine or a coffee, and then going in to see a little gallery or going in to see some theatre or whatever. At the moment, it's comedy. You sort of, there's a very strong understanding of where we've come from and the influences that have made us who we are.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the case. I mean, I also think our wonderfully diverse weather also drives that. You know, you're not necessarily going to say, "Hey guys, let's go out to the park on Sunday," because you don't know if it's going to be a great. But you'd certainly say, "Let's go out for breakfast, lunch, bite of food, and a show or something like that." I think it really fits together well like that.
How important do you think the institutions, if I can use that term, like Grossi's, have been in helping to shape that cultural identity?
I mean, everything contributes. You say the word institution, all you have to do is take a walk down Lygon Street. And, you know, while people may sort of debate the quality of Lygon Street at the moment, you can't deny the impact that strips like that and, you know, even something down to, like, the flower drum and the impact that's had in Melbourne. Everything works towards that. We're really fortunate that our restaurant, while we took it over in 1999, it's been going since 1928. And it's always been the Florentino, and it does stand sort of the test of time, and we try and every day go in there, and what we do every day is honour the traditions of what's come, but look forward to the future and really try and develop new things that people haven't seen in the Italian vernacular. So, for example, a dish that we're doing at the moment is testaroli di Pontremoli, which is only found in this one little town in Tuscany called Pontremoli. And they make a batter out of a heavy flour called caputo and cook it in these big iron pans called testers. And for lack of a better description, it comes out almost like this big pancake. It cooks quite quickly because the iron superheats. Mm. Then that's blanched and then brought together with a little parmigiano, a little bit of oil, a little bit of basil, a hint of garlic. And that's the pasta. It's really unique. It's super traditional, but it is probably the first time it's been done out of Pontremoli.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we try and drive every day. We look for new things that aren't necessarily new, but they honour the culture.
Everything old is new again.
Well, exactly.
Where do you find those things? Do you have to go to Italy and sort of hoof around in your little Fiat and stumble upon them by accident?
They found that, Dad and my sister found that while they were bouncing around in a white van doing the tour for Love Italy, Dad's last book.
Yep.
It's also the town where Zucchero, the Italian pop star, comes from. But
go and see my friend Google and see what he says about Zucchero.
it's one of those things. But, you know, from that dish, we've had a beautiful Tuscan family come in, and they've started talking to us about other dishes from the same town that they'd love to see. And so there you have it. You've unlocked a little bit more culture, a little bit more of a secret sort of thing that's left there. And we're developing our own cultures and our own traditions now in Melbourne. And I suppose that's sort of getting back to what you were asking before. That's sort of the impact that institutions like Florentino or Flower Drum or University Cafe that have been
or Jimmy Watson's.
Or Jimmy
you
Watson's.
You talk about like on the street, you know, not Italian, but it's been there since God knows how long.
And it's great. I actually was in there the other day having a little glass of wine in the new outdoor terrace at the back.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Quite fun.
And then Abla's is around the corner and she's been there for 30 odd years cooking Lebanese food in just off Lygon Street. So it sort of brings us to a fairly nice conclusion because I've got to wrap this up, but we wouldn't have good coffee, we wouldn't have those dining institutions were it not for this great wave of migration that has built us for 150 years since the Chinese came to find gold back in the 1850s. So we are very lucky. Guys, I'm really grateful for your time today. We've learned a little bit more. I haven't even scratched the surface on the coffee. We'll have you back. And we'll always have you back. We might even get
Thank
you with
much,
your dad do a whole hour of the Grossies.
Or put us in stereo.
Yeah, indeed. And then try and work out which one of you is talking. It's 5 minutes to two here on Joy 94.9. I'm going to leave you with a little bit of Zucchero. It's a song called Wonderful Life. I don't know if you know it. It's probably one of his most famous. The Escape Pod guys will take you travelling very shortly. I can see Joe, Russ and Mark all in there waiting to take you on the road somewhere this afternoon from 2 o'clock. It's been a pleasure to have your company. I've been Pete Dillon. This is Cravings. You are on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.